Mm-hmm. All right. So, anyways, hi everyone. Welcome to the Sound Like Bookish Podcast.
We're here.
This is, I don't know what episode this is. I don't really care.
But it is your birthday.
But it is
episode.
My birthday episode. So yay! So yeah.
Meaning that this will be out by the time that it is your birthday, or
yeah. So technically next Friday is my birthday.
Oh well, I won't. Actually, I'll just be getting back to Adrian, Michigan at 5:08 in the morning.
I have that day off.
Technically, I'll be getting back to Toledo, and then we'll be getting back to Adrian.
But
like
yeah, so next Friday. So this episode will be fully out before our birthday is even.
Well,
here.
Happy birthday!
Hey, happy birthday!
29. Since, you know. I'm feeling fine.
Nice.
So we're gonna just start off like normal. And hey, Tony, what you reading? What you watching? What you playing? What are you doing?
Okay, so I'm going to start with what I'm playing because that is the most... Actually, I'm going to start with what I'm playing and what I'm watching. So I am playing Arkham Origins right now because I decided I was going to play through all of the Arkham games, including Gotham Knights, just because, you know, some of them I haven't played in a while, and Arkham Origins is one of the ones I haven't played in a while. I'm still actually like only halfway through Arkham Asylum. But because of internet things and my 360 still works, I was trying to dig out my copy of Arkham City the other night, but I found Arkham Origins first, and I was like, ooh, I haven't played this one in
this
forever.
One first!
So I started playing Arkham. I love that game. I forgot how much I love it. The Arkham girlies out there are stupid and wrong. They think that it's bad. They're wrong. It's actually superior to Asylum in every way.
Oof.
Because progression. It makes way more sense the way that they force you to try to be Batman in, like, his first ever, like... I don't know if it's year one Batman. I feel like it's year two Batman. Because people, like... Black Mask has hired assassins, like the top, the world's top assassins, to kill him. But it's also the introduction of the Joker. So it's obviously not your one Batman because you can't get top-level assassins hired by a top-level gangster.
Right.
Otherwise. However, plus League of Shadows. Anyway, so it's year two Batman. It's really fun. I really enjoy that game a lot. So that's what I'm playing right now. I am watching... with the love of my life, because he has not seen it, and I have seen it so many times that, you know, because it's my annual rewatch every year, we are watching Downton Abbey right now.
And have you made it to the murder snatch yet?
We've made it far past the murder snatch. Okay. We just,
Jen would be so proud.
Yes, we just finished the episode with Mary and Matthew's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So... And he's so in love with Matthew, which is adorable. Because you're just supposed to be, right? Matthew's just gorgeous. But it's really funny watching it this time through with someone else who I respect so much as a storyteller and as a story, like, thinker. Because he's making me realize how many times the plot just plots. Like, it literally just goes, oh, we have to do this thing. And you can see it. Like, it's right there. And I'm like, oh... That character is not making that choice because the character would make that choice. That character is making the choice because Julian Fellowes had to do something in this episode. It's really driving me a little crazy.
Oh, is he pointing those all out to you?
No, not necessarily. Sometimes he points things out and I think to myself, oh yeah, that's going to come later, but I can't tell him that, you know, that kind of thing. But it's, I'm seeing it through his eyes as we're watching it and I'm just going, ew, was that always like that? Okay. All right.
So you're getting a new perspective from having somebody who's never watched it watch it.
Yeah. The other thing I'm watching right now as a rewatch is on my own is Insecure, which I loved when I first watched it. Like like every year that it was coming out, I would rewatch the previous seasons and then watch the new season. I hate it.
You hate it?
Yeah. Like I loved it the first time, but this time I'm like, okay, why are you all in your 30s acting like stupid people? Like, the things that they don't say in order for the plot to work is unbelievable. And I just, it's like, that's the whole point of the show, right? Is it's about messy 30-year-olds. That's the whole point. But the way that it happens is really annoying to me. So I keep thinking to myself, Is this because I'm into poetry right now and I'm like thinking on deep level about words and how we make the world sound and look, that regular plot-driven stories are actually driving me kind of crazy? However, X-Men 97 literally broke my heart last week and is continuing to do so, so clearly I'm just irritated with regular drama where there's no superpowers. But
so what you're saying is we need more with the superpowers.
Always.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. But words. No, also X-Men 97, I know I keep plugging it, but episode 5.
Yeah.
Ouch. Like, when I say ouch.
Everyone on my TikTok For You page keeps saying the exact same thing, and I'm like, I've never even watched it a day in my life. I don't know what we're doing.
It put me in a black mood for 2 days. Like, severely, severely downward spiral for 2 days just from one 33-minute episode. It hurt. So, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm reading poetry, so, you know, nothing specific, just a whole bunch of queer black poets throughout history because, well, it's what we do best.
Are there a lot?
Gobs. American poetry would not be without queer black writers, period.
Because, like, I'm not a poetry person, so I know absolutely zero.
It is insane. When you look, every single significant decade of American literature has an unbelievable number of significant queer black poets. Yeah, you always hear about Ginsberg and William Carlos Williams and all of the, you know, all the white guys. You always hear about...
I don't even know who they are.
Yeah, you always hear about the white guys.
Yeah.
But when you read their poetry, Howl is an exception because Howl is just genius. Leaves of Grass is also an exception because it's just genius. But you hear about all the guys and then you read them and you're like, okay, E.E. Cummings, so... Actually, E.E. Cummings is not that bad. But Robert Frost is kind of like... you know, compared to Gwendolyn Brooks and Audre Lorde and Alice Walker, and that's just three random queer black women.
Alice Walker's queer?
Oh, yeah. Like, basically, she was like, I'm inventing a term, it's called womanist, to differentiate myself from the white feminists, and also I like women.
Oh, I love her for that. Yeah. That's cute.
Yeah, she's a bit
cute, and then, like, you know.
She has issues, but yes, but yeah,
but
so.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, but it's yeah, cute. No. Yeah, so poetry is amazing. Actually, Gwendolyn Brooks might not be queer, but she's definitely black and she's a force. So
Just including her in it because we like her.
Yeah, so I'm having fun with that, just exploring all those things. So anyway, Grant, what are you reading? I don't know why we always make Aaron go last.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
you're either first or last.
No, this one actually makes sense.
Perfect.
So,
true.
All right, yes. Grant, what are you reading?
Yeah, I'm reading the same old stuff I've been reading. So we don't need to talk about that. I'll talk about some movies, though.
Sure.
I've seen that recently. Okay, I'll talk about two. One is old, one is new.
Mm.
Ooh,
old
okay.
one is from 1977. It is Sorcerer, directed by William Friedkin. Director of The Exorcist and The French Connection.
Oh, okay, never mind.
For half a second, I thought you were going to say Star Wars, and I was like, OMG.
Yeah, have you guys heard about this? It's like this obscure little sci-fi movie.
Wait, did he direct Star Wars?
No. Star Wars came out in 1977.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
That is part of the reason it didn't do well in theaters.
Oh,
but,
okay. So what is Sorcerer about?
Sorcerer. What is Sorcerer about?
It's about a sorcerer.
So... you wouldn't know for about the first hour or so, because that's about how long it takes for the actual plot to begin. But
okay.
In a good way.
Okay.
It's like constantly introducing you to characters and their, you know, their stories seem disconnected from each other, and then eventually y'all end up in the same situation.
Sure.
So the main thrust is these people, for differing reasons, they... fled America, either because they're running from the law or they're running from organized crime or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's one guy from Israel that comes that is not from America. And there's a French guy as well.
Interesting.
But, so they're hanging out and working in this South American village in this unnamed country. And this oil refinery blows up. Or a good portion of it.
Mm.
Or they strike oil or whatever and it catches on fire. They can't do anything.
Yeah.
And so they have to get these sticks of not quite dynamite. It's something more dangerous.
Sure.
Fair.
And they can't airlift it there. They can't, you know, take it by boat because they're landlocked.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they go to the village and they ask these people, you know, we're looking for skilled truck drivers.
Mm.
who are drive it in there.
Who are willing to drive this, who, if you bump too hard, you're going to go boom. Mm-hmm. So they get, one of the guys is Roy Schneider. I forgot to mention that. He's the guy from Jaws.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, the main thrust of the movie is this unlikely group of people have to transport this dynamite to the oil refinery in order to stop, you know, the fire and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it doesn't go well. it doesn't go as smoothly as...
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm the guy who directed The Exorcist.
But yeah, are there sorcerers? Yeah.
There are no sorcerers. In fact, I'm not sure why the movie is called Sorcerer.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's based on a book which was not called Sorcerer, so I don't know where the title comes from.
Okay.
But it's a very interesting movie. Kind of unclassifiable, because it's like, it's kind of a drama, it's kind of suspenseful. Honestly, it's one of the most stressful movies I've seen recently.
Interesting.
Just because, like, you're just biting your nails because, like, with every bump and every roadblock they run into, you're like, oh, geez, are they going to blow up? Is this going to... And it's that kind of movie where something would come out of left field like that. Like, halfway through, everybody dies or something. and I won't say whether or not that happens.
Okay. That is interesting.
No, it's a thrilling movie. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of unknown these days.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth checking out if you have a chance.
What's the new one?
Yeah.
The new one. Red Rocket. Has anybody heard of that?
No.
Okay.
You know I don't watch movies. Why are you asking me this question?
I do watch movies and I haven't heard of that one. What's that one? What?
So, I had seen the director's previous movie, The Florida Project, which I think we used to have.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of that one.
Which is great. Okay. William Dafoe and a bunch of non-actors.
Yeah. William Dafoe!
I love William Dafoe. He's great.
No, he's one of the best we got.
Yeah, he is.
So, this one... okay, so we are following a guy. He comes back to his small Texas hometown. He is a former adult film star.
Okay.
And he tries to find, you know, he kind of bums a room to stay in with his old girlfriend.
Sure.
Well, actually, they're still married. I was going to say, like, ex-wife or something, but they are still married, technically.
Interesting.
But obviously, he has troubles finding work because people are stupid.
Yes.
And
yeah.
In fact, pretty much in all of this guy's movies, he's kind of trying to destigmatize sex work.
Oh. Well, that just bumped him all the way up to the top of my list of filmmakers to watch.
This is an A24.
It is, yeah. Because his first movie was Tangerine. I don't know if you've ever...
Oh, I've heard of Tangerine,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Tangerine was one of the first, like, feature-length movies to be filmed on an iPhone.
Oh, right. Okay.
But he goes very hard on that theme in that one as well. But yeah, it's just a Red Rocket. It's very funny. It's deeply, deeply troubling and sad at the same time.
Sure.
Fair.
There's, similar to his other movies, there's a lot of non-actors, like, you know, like, just people mixed in there. It definitely leads to a very... at least to a sense of realism that you can't get.
Yeah, like, when otherwise. You say non-actors, you mean, like, people who... aren't known, or people who
he just found.
Extras, or
people who just found.
That's
in fact, they're probably from small town Texas, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating.
And yeah, so I can't think of the main guy's name, the actor. He
hold on.
In Red Rocket, okay. Because he...
Simon Rex,
yes. He was in some of the, like, old scary movies. You know that series? The awful, horror movie.
Oh, he's in Scary Movies.
Oh, Scary Movies.
Yes, Scary Movies.
Oh, got it. Those, yeah.
Like,
I've seen first one, I think.
Four.
He gives a really, really great, believable performance, and, like... If you'd have seen him in, like, anything else, you wouldn't think, wow, that guy's a great actor. But I think this role, he pulls from his own life experiences a little bit, if you look into his past and whatnot.
Sure.
It's just really something to behold. It's just a great movie overall.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Go watch it.
I will. He sounds really interesting. Wow. All right. Sure. I love it.
Aaron.
All right, Aaron.
Okay. So, first of all, I need to tell everyone that... wrestling happened this past couple weeks, and so now I'm back into there.
Yeah.
It never ends. My brother and I were watching it, like, I think a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and there were moments where I was literally just throwing things on the floor in frustration. So anybody who watches wrestling, they just know.
Yeah, they're probably right now.
What pay-per-view I watched.
Sure.
And why I was throwing things on the floor.
Sure.
But on top of that, so... I've been reading a lot of Teen Wolf fan fiction lately. I've never watched Teen Wolf in my entire life.
It was boring.
I found out it's on Hulu now, all of it. And so you know what I'm going to watch? I'm going to watch Teen Wolf.
Let me know how far you get, because I felt like it was like a basement budget Vampire Diaries. And
I'm basically watching it for Ian Bowen at this point.
Sure.
Who yeah. plays Peter Hale.
Okay.
And... Tyler, who plays,
Tyler Posey, yeah.
Well,
no, not Posey. Is it Posey?
Hoechlin.
Oh, that's right, there's two Tylers, I forget.
Yeah, there's two Tylers. Yeah. Tyler, who's Sephiroth in the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Oh, okay.
That Tyler. Okay. Also, he plays Superman, so.
That, yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, so that, I'm watching it for them, because I'm more entertained by them and Dylan O'Brien being completely, like, sarcastic the whole entire time, and I think that's great.
Yeah, I forgot Dylan O'Brien was in that. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
He was, like, the one character who carried the whole entire show on his back.
And it was still so boring.
I'm going to try to watch that, because why not? But I've been playing Sims 3 lately.
Oh.
I fixed up my Sims 3, and currently I'm playing a game as a private investigator because it's really entertaining.
Sure.
Because you can dress up in, like, the trench coat mm-hmm. bit, and you can go to random locations and grab, like, a stick, like, with leaves on it and stake out locations on purpose.
Fascinating. Okay.
And some of the earlier styles of cases that you solve... Literally, this one little girl, her brother stole the toothpaste, and I had to bribe the brother with $25 to give back the toothpaste.
Wow.
Another person, I had to help. He was really mad at another one of the town people,
mm-hmm.
the townies, and so I had to go onto a forum and bully the other person on purpose. And then you have to also turn around and you have to search in people's trash cans and their mailboxes. You just get to basically be a really snoopy person. And I think it's hilarious.
Grand Theft Auto, but by way of Sims?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Essentially, and I think it's really entertaining. Last time I played Sims, my character was a ghost hunter. And had to run around and go save, like... And their idea of ghost hunter for Sims 3... I love Sims 4, don't get me wrong, but mm-hmm. Sims 3 has a kind of je ne sais quoi that comes with their different types of references
mm-hmm.
that you wouldn't get in Sims 4, because Sims 4 does the references, but it's so subtle that, like, unless you're reading every single description of that item, you won't get it.
Right, yeah.
Sims 3, the ghost hunters are dressed up like Ghostbusters. And that's their job, is they go do Ghostbusters, and that's it.
That's great.
And it's hilarious.
I do like that.
But I'm in a supernatural town, and so there's werewolves, there's fairies, there's witches, and then there's vampires, and they're all trying, the vampires and the wolves... They're trying to decide who founded the town first.
Of course they are.
And so they have, like, a fight kind of thing going on where they hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I really like about Sims 3 is that a lot of the different, like, relationships are already put in there.
Mm, okay.
And so if two characters hate each other, they hate each other. And it's hilarious to watch.
Yeah.
And I have this thing called story progression. So it just adds a little bit more in there because it'll start pairing people together. It'll break up couples. It'll turn around. And apparently there's a character right now who has a really, really bad secret. And I don't even know what it is at this point. But do you know what I want to do? I want to find it out. So I'm going to try to become friends with his wife. I literally turned around and I'm supposed to be searching in somebody's trash can, and they live across the street from me. My character lives in a trailer, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They live across the street from me. I literally watched a random man leave the house at 7 a.m. who was not related to any of them, and I have no idea why he was there.
Honestly, that is one of the funnest things about The Sims. Like,
are these
two random characters having an affair or something?
And the thing is, the character that left the house, he's also married. and a werewolf, and his storyline is really interesting because here's the thing. He was a bachelor, like a perpetual bachelor, and he found a girl and he really liked her. Turns out she was a werewolf and then turned him against his will. And they got married, and so now he's trying to figure out what he's supposed to do. The town that I'm in, because Sims 3 comes out.
Okay.
Sims 3 Supernatural comes out, which is the expansion pack that the town is in, comes out at the height of Twilight. So there is not only a Twilight-esque house, it's empty, but you can live in the house.
Of course.
There is also a family called the Swains.
Bye.
And the Swains is Chester and Bailey.
Swain. Oh my goodness. So wow.
If you really wanted to.
That's Charlie could, and Becca Bella Swan.
Yes. Yeah. And there's the Van Ghouls.
Oh.
It's the Van Goulds with a D at the end.
Uh-huh.
But the Van Ghouls, and so there's the patriarch, and then he has two teenage kids.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, you have the wolf family. And I'm like, okay. And there's also being human reference, as there's an actual, like, have you ever seen the TV show
The show Being Human? Yeah, yeah.
There is, it's a ghost, a vampire, a witch, and a werewolf.
Yeah, like, they all live in an apartment, a flat in London.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is a household based on the Being Human
That's
cast.
That's great.
And they are all that. It's hilarious. There's a Pip Goodfellow, so, you know, there's a Midsummer
wow.
Night's Dream family in there.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
There's Oberon and Titania in there.
Oh, it should be.
Well,
yeah.
Granted, in Sims 2, there's a town called Veronaville, and the whole entire town is all Midsummer Night. No, not Midsummer.
Romeo and Juliet.
It's all Shakespeare.
Oh, it's all Shakespeare. Oh, that's
so
fun.
So there is a family that is all Midsummer Night's Dream. So there's a Titania, Oberyn, Puck, and Bottom are all in the same family.
Yeah.
Titania and Oberyn have adopted Pip, Bottom, and Puck, which is really cool.
Well, sure, yeah.
And then there is a Helena and the sisters that are all a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Romeo and Juliet thing going on. This is all happening at the exact same time. And if you play Sims 2, you know for a fact, or at least everyone who plays Sims 2 knows that there is a specific order that you play the households in, because there's a storyline that's automatically attached to the town.
Yeah.
And so in the storyline for Midsummer Night, for the Veronaville, is you go to the house of Oberon and Titania, which is the, I don't even remember what their last name is, I don't care. But their house, because they're throwing a party. Puck is throwing a party, and he's trying to get with Hermia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole thing, and if you're not careful, and he kisses Hermia, the, like, that can happen. But because the Montes and the Caps are both there at the party, it is on site for them. It's on site, so Romeo and Juliet are both at the party.
Of course.
If Tybalt catches them at the party, who's her cousin?
Of course.
No, that's her. No, he's her older brother in this one. But if he catches it, like them, like talking to each other, or he catches them, he's on site and basically will start a whole entire fight in the middle of the party and ruins the whole party.
Wow,
it's hilarious. And so I love it. Sims 4 doesn't exactly have that type of lore. Well, they've moved it, so they have some lore now.
Yeah.
But it's not as good as Sims 2, Sims 3 lore, where the characters automatically had some type of beef or some storyline, and there was something that they could do, and there was stuff that like was happening in the town.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Wow. I never knew
Sims lore that you didn't know.
Wow.
You should just let me play it for you sometime. Like, But speaking of things that are fun, we watched, or at least I watched, and I know Tony watched a couple episodes.
I
don't know if you watched.
I watched the first episode.
You watched the first episode?
Yeah.
Good.
I watched the first two, one, because that's how much time I had, but also because the first volume that it covers that.
The first two episodes is basically
what
it
covers.
Yeah,
just the first volume, yeah. So, and that's what I read, so that's what
we watched Tokyo Ghoul.
Yeah.
I asked everyone too because
it was your birthday episode.
It's my birthday episode, but it's also my book discussion pick a couple episodes ago.
Yes.
So I thought it would be a great way to wrap those two together in a nice little bow mm-hmm. by having us read the manga and then watch the anime. Mm-hmm. So what does everyone think? Or if they have anything that they want to throw out there immediately.
So if you were listening two episodes ago or if you have listened to the episode, we all know that I was rather cross with the world building and mm-hmm. everything in the first volume. I'm still rather cross about it. However, the anime is far superior.
It's really interesting to say that. Far superior
to the manga. Because the studio knows what it's doing. And the other thing that I really appreciated about it that I didn't expect, I think, it makes sense now that I've seen it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of the direction it was going. Did you watch it in subbed or dubbed? I watched it in subbed. Subbed.
Yeah. I watched it in dubbed.
Interesting. Okay. I've started it, like for example, Bleach and My Hero, I watch in dubbed because I've started them that way. And then everything else, if I'm introducing myself to something, I will watch it in sub just because, mm-hmm. you know, I prefer it that way. Wow, that made me sound like an anime nerd. Anyway.
I mean, I also agree with you, so go off.
Yeah. So
go off, queen.
I loved the mood of the anime so much. It's reminiscent of Paranoia Agent.
Yeah.
Without being as insane as Paranoia Agent is. I mean, Paranoia Agent is like...
I still need to watch that.
Yeah, it's so good. But the mood of Tokyo Ghoul mm-hmm. is familiar. It's similar to that. So it's way less shonen than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, no. This is not a shonen whatsoever. This is not your My Hero Academia-esque shonen, despite the fact...
Even though it's published, isn't it? Yeah. As a Viz Media shonen, or is it? No. Is that no? Okay, maybe wrong with that. But no, they leaned into the horror aspects of mm-hmm. it, and I liked that. Particularly Kaneki's understanding of himself,
yes,
as half ghoul, half human, like along the way, is really well done. I thought the book kind of breezed past that. Because it had to get on with whatever, and I was just kind of like, okay, but I'm not feeling anything. Whereas in the show, there were points at which, by the way, I don't recommend eating lunch.
If you're going to watch the show.
While watching the first two episodes.
I ate ramen while I watched it.
Oh, God, I almost threw up a few times during lunch because... Bridget, just, even also, like the stomach noises. Oh.
I watched another while eating food, to be honest. So Tokyo Ghoul is kind of like nothing to me when you watch that anime specifically.
Sure. Yeah. No, I really liked it. It was better than the manga. It's still not
the best.
Yeah, it's still too convenient is the wrong word. Because it's less convenient than the manga, in my mm-hmm. opinion. Like they kind of tried to shore up all of those, but I just don't, I do not like, and maybe it'll explain itself, I don't know, but I do not like the way that the ghouls are treated as a supernatural, like, because it's almost like they can't make up their mind what they want to do with them, like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a big fan of, if you're going to introduce a supernatural race, make them supernatural. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Which means that their body chemistry has to be different. They're literally eating human beings live. Like, they're not cooking them. They're not, I mean, maybe they could. But that's the point, is that they're so physiologically different that they can't eat human food, which is prepared, which is, you know, like the one character that has no idea what cake tastes like, you know?
Toba? Yeah.
So, like, to me, but strangely enough, they can drink coffee. And I'm like, see, that doesn't feel like what it would really be like to live in this world. What that feels like to me is someone who wrote this hates coffee or loves coffee, and so they decided that coffee was the thing that the ghouls could drink. It just, but the anime, because of all of the other things that it was doing really well, it was easier to take that, if that makes sense.
Like, that's, I was just really kind of like, eh, interesting.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of people who watch it, granted, they're watching it way farther than we have watched it.
That's true, yeah.
A lot of people have a lot of qualms. Like, they'll like the first, like, season or something, but when you get to the later seasons, because Tokyo Ghoul has Tokyo Ghoul, and then there's RE, which is the second half of the whole entire series.
Yeah.
When you reach that, like, the later seasons, a lot of people are like, no, the manga is superior. So it's really interesting. Okay. So I, granted, for me, I'm going to continue, like, going through with it, but I think it'll be really interesting to watch slash read what fans mean when they have that, like, cross of, like, oh, this is really great, this is really great, and then they cross over and then they immediately switch to the opposite side at certain points. I will say that watching it in sub, I think, is a little bit more superior, because...
Probably, yeah.
The voice actors just do just a little bit more emotion.
Actually,
in it.
Yeah, the voice actors in sub were quite good.
In the dubbed version, while it's fine, it's great. Don't get me wrong. Hide is hilariously adorable in dubbed. I will say, Kaneki's just crying for like 3 episodes straight in English dub. Just really gets on your nerves.
Yeah, I have noticed that with anything subbed, any anime subbed, when there's a moment of absolute anguish for a character, you should be watching it in sub, because, there's something about, like young Japanese male voice actors, the good ones, when they shriek or cry, like, it breaks your whole heart. It's very intense. It's
off topic, but... Because I know you're watching My Hero Academia, and I know I set you a certain episode that you have to watch.
Almost, like, I'm, like, 2 episodes
from. When you watch it dubbed, then watch it subbed.
Okay.
Like, watch the certain point that I'll tell you, because what you just...
I don't know what that would sound like, but okay.
No, just because of the fact that, like, because you're talking about, like, Japanese male voice actors just putting in the work, man.
Yeah, they really, yeah.
He does that in that episode. Like, it is there. Just, like, the work is there. Like, you just... he got his money's worth.
I also really like the way that the ghoul that attacked him... I can never remember.
Rize?
Yeah, I love how she keeps cropping back up.
Did you ever notice when she first came in, which is a really, really interesting thing... And I didn't notice it in the manga. Granted, I wasn't...
Because it wasn't... She doesn't come back in the manga. Like, they talk about her.
Yeah.
But the way that they use... That's why I mean by the anime. Yes. Like, really, they
throws that in there.
Yeah, they do. And they really understand that they're working with a visual medium that's separate from the still pages. Ugh, because every time she just shows up, it's so haunting.
Well, here's the thing. It's a feature of all anime, and you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about when I get there. But in the manga, I don't think she had this hairstyle. I think her hair was just completely down in the manga. In the anime, she has the dead mom hair.
Excuse
me. Grant, do you not know the dead mom hair?
I don't know
that. So the dead mom hair in anime is every single mom that is going to die in some way, shape, or form in the anime will always have the exact same haircut, where their hair is long, but their ponytail is down here to the side, and I'm actually doing it for Grant to see, everyone who is listening at home. And their hair is, like, down here, and then they have, like, some strands that are out.
Yeah.
And it's called the dead mom hairstyle, because every single mom in anime who dies has that hairstyle. So it's just become a phenomenon that's just automatically in there.
Interesting. That's hilarious.
I wonder why. Like, why did it be
I don't know, but it's kind of entertaining.
Because I know in anime, like, the color of the hair can represent a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah,
but it's one of those things where, like, you... I don't know if it's, like, a stereotypical thing. I don't know if it's, something part of their culture thing. I don't know what it is, but it's just something that's been pattern recognized throughout anime. Because, you know, Edward from Fullmetal Alchemist, his mom had that hairstyle.
Yeah, she did, actually. Yeah.
The mom who's alive right now is Midoriya's mom. Does she have that hairstyle?
No.
She has a completely separate hairstyle.
She's sick.
Do you know whose mom also had that hairstyle? Sasuke's mom. Naruto's mom all had that hairstyle at some point in the anime. Like, they have it. Yeah. But it is just, like, a little weird thing that all fans just go, like, oh, yep. Okay, see you later. You're not going to be here for that long.
So interesting. I wonder.
Ichigo's mom from Bleach had the hairstyle. Like...
Yeah, I still haven't gotten to the point with Ichigo's mom. I know she's going to crop up at some point that happens.
It's part of it, but Rize had that hairstyle.
Yeah.
When she comes into the cafe in the first episode. And I sat there and I'm watching it on my phone as I'm playing Sims, because that's what I do in life. And that's why I was watching it dubbed, because then I wouldn't have to pay as much attention.
Yeah. Right.
I looked down and then I went, she has the hairstyle. Granted, I already knew what was going to happen because I read the manga, mm-hmm. and I knew she was going to just be...
She's gonna die anyway.
But, like, I saw the hairstyle and I just went, for somebody who's never read the manga a day in their life,
yeah,
immediate recognition of, like, oh.
Oh, she's gonna die. She's, right.
Yeah. I will say, Toka still annoys me either way.
Oh, well, I've only seen two episodes, and I like Toka. She's just still kind of a non-entity at this point. Like,
she's
like, okay,
a little bit
that's
more...
fine. She's a plot device. Like, she's the one that shows up and tells him
she's that he's a little bit more later, if I remember right.
Okay.
But I will say, like, she's just, like, there, plot device-y. I will say just, like, her just, like... Kaneki's just, like, fighting against it, and she's just, like, so mad at him for it that he's just there, and I'm just like, girl!
Yeah, I have,
like,
been...
Like, chill!
Yeah.
Like, for 2 seconds!
Joe and I had a conversation about Tokyo Ghoul Saturday, because he's seen all of the anime. Not RE. He hasn't seen RE, but I don't think. Maybe yes. But he's seen the full, you know...
Original arc.
And then we were just talking about things, and so I know what goes down between him and Toka at one point.
No, yeah,
and that's literally
too.
Like the only part of the show that he likes. Everything else he's just like, eh. And I was like, good, I'm not crazy, because I felt like I was wrong. Not wrong, but like I felt like I was missing something, if that makes sense.
Them being thing is just so plot like C to the whole entire thing.
Yes.
The plot A is like him obviously like getting his organs rearranged and all of a sudden now he's this
half ghoul,
half ghoul. Plot B is, spoiler alert, kind of, I guess, is, you know, him cannibalizing ghouls instead of humans as, like, a whole entire thing at some point.
Oh, sure. That makes sense.
Plot
I can see that going.
C, honestly, is him and Hide. Like, his whole entire, like, thing has to do with Hide.
Sure.
Like, Toka's completely, like, non-entity at this point. Like, it is... literally just all Hide.
Right, which, like, yeah, that makes sense. Great. Which I kind of like. I mean, that's the only thing that will draw me back is the fact that there's more Hide. I mean, you know, I love their friendship, but I like that anyway. Any anime that has two boys who are really good friends,
mm-hmm.
And really, I mean, just, like, as friends, not as, like, some weird subpar, we can't say that they're gay in our country, but we'll try it anyway. No, there is something really special about the way anime treats boyhood friendship that I really vibe with.
Do you know how, like,
because that's something American storytelling mm-hmm. does not do. For some reason, two young males cannot be friends unless they're, like, good friends unless they're gay. Or, like, you know what I mean? That's something weird in American storytelling. But in anime... It's a culture thing. Yeah. But, I mean, like, if Ichigo, like, goes just as hard for Chad as he does for Orihime, because he's like, that's my friend. And like, it's great.
You know, My Hero Academia, you see that with Bakugo and Izuku the whole entire time.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
well, and
they hate each other.
Yes.
Izuku doesn't hate him, but, like, Bakugo hates him for, like, mm-hmm. a good, like, hot minute there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those, like, this is my best friend, even though I don't say he is. And if you touch him, I'm going to have a whole entire
thing. Yeah, like, that fight between the two of them when they're literally actually, like, fighting each other.
Yes.
And then All Might kind of steps in, but it's like, wait a minute. You do both realize that you're friends, right? And Bakugo goes, yeah, but that's not the point. Like, it's literally like the way that, like, two... You most often in American storytelling will see, like the two female best friends, right?
Right.
Who are mad at each other, but they can't say it. And then finally they have that fight, that big epic fight where it's like, I'm going to say all the stuff I didn't mean to say. And then the other one says the same thing. And then they're mad at each other for 3 episodes. And they come back and go, I'm sorry, girl. We're good.
You like, can say my best friend. Diaries. I know what you
I'm
mean.
I'm actually thinking of Insecure because that happens in season 4 at one point. But like, but it's a staple. That's a staple in American storytelling. Where like the two girl best friends, Gossip Girl does it. I mean, they all do it, right?
Yeah.
But to see that in a one superhero show,
yes,
was like between two guys, between two
you
kids
see
who
that
are not
a lot.
Like,
and I will I like loved it. I will commend / like applaud like Japanese anime, Korean dramas.
Mm.
For throwing that in there, because like you see like these characters, like you have, you know, Bakugo and Midoriya, you have, granted they hate each other for a hot while, but there's a whole reason for it,
right.
Sasuke and Naruto, you have like all
Hide
these
and Kaneki.
Hide and Kaneki, like most of what Kaneki does is literally because he wants to protect Hide. Like it's like a whole like mental thing for him. And so yes.
The first season of Fooly Cooly does it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something that you just see, and I will applaud them for that because like it's really good. And I haven't gotten that type of like boyhood friendship, ironically enough, since I've read The Outsiders.
Oh yeah. Sure.
You see that between like Pony Boy and Johnny.
I've never read it, but yeah.
Like, they have, like, a whole thing. Mm-hmm. Granted, they're brought together more by the trauma of, you know, accidentally murdering a guy who was jumping them. But, like...
I mean, but still, whatever it takes,
still,
right?
Still, it's there, but yeah. You don't see that a lot.
Yeah, and I
American writers, get on the ball. Give me some good, like, boyhood, like...
Well, it's, I mean, you know, of course, there's a cultural, you know, stigma against...
Do it anyways.
You know, boys being close for some reason. It's not that. It's boys showing emotion. You know what I mean? Like, in anime, that's the other thing. It's one of the core, another core component of anime, is that boys showing emotion is a big function.
Kaneki cries,
I mean,
straight for like 30 episodes.
Right, it's literally
his whole thing.
Yeah, that's literally the backbone of Shonen, which is this boy is going to do two things. He's going to cry a lot, period, and he's also going to scream about how he's going to rescue his friends, and that's going to give him power.
Literally,
like that's
literally Kaneki in episode 3. Granted, neither of you have seen episode 3 yet, but most of the episode, he's just like drooling out of the mouth and crying because he just refuses
to eat Hide. And everyone's like, and they're like,
okay,
never mind that.
Interesting.
So yeah, I Grant, what did you think?
I only watched like the first episode, but what did you think so far?
I liked it about as much as I did the manga, which is not a whole lot.
That's fair.
I mean, it's just not my thing.
I know,
I mean,
it's
I
not
think,
your thing.
I think you called it a superhero thing, which I would agree with how it's set up, which
yeah.
I'm just not really into.
Yeah.
I found the friend even more annoying. In the flesh, when you can actually hear him talk and stuff.
Sure. Did you watch it dubbed then, or subbed?
English or
I watched it subbed.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I will give you the voice. The voice actors were very good.
Dubbed Teenage is cute. Like, he fits the he fits the college freshy vibe very well.
Sure, sure.
Kaneki does not. He fits the more so... He fits the Izuku Midoriya voice vibe before the Izuku Midoriya voice became a thing.
Ew. I don't like that for him.
Who's
for Kaneki.
Who's
for
this?
Kaneki?
No, who is the...
Midoriya is my hero, but...
Okay.
Because he's got, like, kind of like a... It's... He's soft... Kaneki is soft-spoken. He's nerdy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Like, as his thing.
Which, I guess, if you were casting for a dub, like an English actor or English-speaking voice actor, I could see someone, especially after the success of My Hero, I could see someone making that call as a casting director because that is something that the two characters have in common is that they're both nerds. Mm-hmm. But... That's it? Mm-hmm. Like, again, Tokyo Ghoul is a straight up, like the anime especially, is a straight up horror. Like that's the whole, like,
yes.
There's a scene in episode 2 that really made that jump out to me. Because I was like, okay, yeah. But horror is not just, ooh, spooky, scary, right? Like, you know, that's not how horror works. You have to have the element of what life was before the horror started, because that's going to deepen the levels of horror that come through. You know what I mean? Like, so there's a scene where they show
he's Marco in Attack on Titan. That makes so much sense.
How Hide and Kaneki first, like, met each other. And got to know each other. And as they're walking into the school for something, the camera's on Hide, and Kaneki is asking himself, will we ever have to get to a point where we stop walking side by side? And I was just like that, knowing where Kaneki is as a character, knowing that he's literally like 2 seconds from just gobbling him down because of uncontrollable ghoul urges, that deepens the horror immediately. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, because like the sun is shining. It's like this very, very normal thing is literally underscored by this very, very scary, out of control element in this point in the story. And that's why I thought that the anime just handled that element really well.
I will praise the actual moments of like violence. I thought that was done well. And like you mentioned, the sound effects and stuff, you know. But
there's also in episode 1, one of my favorite moment in episode 1 was Kaneki literally like on his knees, like sobbing.
He's sobbing
from the pain. That was so, again, horrifying, because it's like I'm eating lunch, and maybe that's why it was horrifying too, because it's like I'm satisfying my hunger cravings right now, but oh my god, what must it be like to be like literally that hungry, your house is full of food, and nothing is satisfying, all of it tastes horrible. There's, and he mentions like because Hide apparently bought him like this really special hamburger or something. And so he says, "Oh, Hide, did you really spy this for me special?" As he's making it, and he literally cannot bring it to his lips because it's that repulsive. And I was just like, oh, that's good. That like fine
line
detail. That's so good. And I like that the anime was able to do that, you know.
So. I mean, episode 3 is where it starts picking up a little bit.
That makes sense, yeah.
Because that's kind of where I'm leaving off is, like, I'm on episode 4 right now. Mm-hmm. Episode 3 is where things start to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so if you guys remember in the first episode, there was a little bit of context that was given that wasn't given really much in the manga for the first part, where they have Rize and Jason fighting each other.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. There's mention of like.
There's mention of it in the manga,
but it's not as
made as
pronounced.
Big, yes.
Yeah.
But in the anime, they made that whole entire thing, that little prologue, really pronounced in there.
Mm-hmm.
When you hit episode 3, it's slowly starting to shift gears, and this is kind of where I kind of like where the anime is going with it.
Mm-hmm.
They do this thing where it's. In, and I don't know if it's at the end of episode 2 or beginning of 3, and it just really makes sense this way, where they're at the CCG, and the CCG is kind of like anti-ghoul police force kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where they are just kind of like, we want the ghouls out of Tokyo, Jason, the character who was fighting Rize, is from a different ward. Like, he's from a different section of Tokyo.
Right.
And she's classified as a binge eater in her ward of the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a thing. And according to the CCG, they're 2 S-class subjects.
Right.
Like, they are really high on their list of people that they're watching, right?
Right.
And they finally get into, like, a meeting where they have all these people going, like, hey, there's all this stuff happening. This happened between these 2 characters. Rize is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Jason is missing, and all we have is a pair of pliers.
The one
that's left.
That she took from him?
Mm-hmm. Mm. And that's all that's left. And it's given to... Now, it's giving precedence as to the CCG is now going to start inkling their way into the 20th Ward where Kaneki is.
Right.
Into there. And so you start to see a little bit of the plot starting moving.
Sure.
In a way where he's not getting used to the, like, the ghoul aspect. Because, yeah, it then transfers, like, he's got a job at the coffee shop, whatever.
Right, yeah.
But, like, you see that little bit with the CCG, and then you see there's another scene with a ghoul, and, like, there's, like, a wife and a kid, and there's, like, all this stuff that's going on. But, like, you see all this stuff, and you go, oh, we're about to finally get into it. Granted, the first season's only, like, 12 episodes.
Right.
And so you're finally able to see a little more of the pieces just fall into play.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes why, like, the manga's great. I love manga, don't get me wrong. But sometimes I really just like the anime for how fast-paced it gets.
Sure.
To the point where you're like, all right, great, we're going to move on to this next portion. Like, let's hit it ground running.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, My Hero Academia, where sometimes the first four seasons are more lighthearted, and then you hit season four, and then you go, oh.
See, that's one of the things that I really respect
about
My Hero. For me, Tokyo Ghoul, like, the first two episodes, and everything that I've heard from people who've seen more than that, it reminds me a lot of why I'm disgruntled AF towards Death Note.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I've never seen Death Note.
Don't waste your time.
Okay.
Death Note purports to be genius, but it is a waste of time because they're trying to convince you all along that they're actually more clever than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the story, about halfway through the story, it breaks and they can't control it either. Like, it has to go the direction it's going. They have to reveal certain things that they have to reveal. Otherwise, what were they building all that up for? Do you know what I mean? So they build it all the way up to this point, and then the egg breaks. And they don't know how to fix it. And you can tell, and they fumble. And I'm just like, you rushed it. You could have really massaged the story. You could have really done a better job, but you just had to. It was like the uncontrollable carrot, right? Like, you had to go that direction. And I feel like Tokyo Ghoul is similar in that sense, where it's like, ooh, wouldn't this be fun? Ooh, wouldn't this be fun? And then there's gonna come a moment. Part of this I know because Joe has already told me, but
it breaks.
But there's
it
gonna come a moment
later
where it's gonna be like, boom. And he put it perfectly when he said he felt like they had this scene in their minds the whole time, and that's what they were going for, and had no idea that every mistake that they were making was compounding on top of itself, so that falls flat.
It's the scene he's talking about at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I kind of...
Even though he did say it was a big moment and he loved it, he was still just like...
No, yeah, so I understand where he's going with that, too, because, like, it's just one of those, like, the mistakes build. And I think that's why people like the manga a bit better than the anime itself, is because...
It takes its time.
It takes its time with that.
Mm-hmm.
The anime, however, does not. So once it reaches that one little... The egg breaks in the end of the season...
Mm-hmm.
They don't just end the season there. They continue onwards because there's more seasons after that.
It's just, yeah, Death Note makes the exact same mistake.
But the mistake that they made is the fact that they just kept the mistake in there and they just kept going. And so it just kind of continues building after that on top of the egg. Like, they just added more.
Yeah, I've heard that Death Note, once you get to the end, apparently it makes it, like,
better.
They apparently get better. They correct themselves or whatever. I just don't buy it. Like, maybe I need to, like, actually go through and finish it. But, like, the 10 episodes I... Six, well, not 10. Like 6 episodes I watched after, like, the moment you realize, you know, everything. You're just like, wait, what? Now you're just trying to prove that we didn't see what we saw. Huh? Like, it just... doesn't make sense. And I, especially having seen so many other anime that just handle anime storytelling either better or differently, or, you know, I will always cite Berserk 97 for handling that Black Swordsman arc, handling it that way, because it's another one of those that takes its time. It's building something.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know what it's building to. And once you see what it's building to, you're like, I'm sorry, what? I still have some issues. But it's still really well done because they took their time. You fall in love with these people. And you want them to win. Even though once you get to that part, you're like, oh, there's no winning here, is there? Oh, there's no winning. Oh, God. And it only gets worse. I love that. That's why I love My Hero, because right now I'm in that part where it's like, oh, this is only going to get worse. This is only going to get worse. But that's literally why they built the story that way. They wanted you to fall head over heels for every single one of these characters, which for My Hero is like 400 deep.
Yes.
You're like falling in love with like literally like 400 named powered characters.
Yep.
And then they're like, and now it's time to level up. And they waste
no time.
And it's... I love that feeling.
So, one of my favorite horror animes, it's called Another, which I've mentioned to everyone so many times.
Isn't it a book?
Yep. It was novelized.
Yes, okay.
Yes, I ordered it for us because I thought it would be... For horror fans, I think it really works for them.
Yeah.
Or at least it should. The anime is slow. There's only like 13 episodes.
Oh, nice. First. Oh, good. Okay. I like the shorter ones.
The anime is slow going... At first, there's not a lot of context that gets thrown in there, and then you get to episode 7. So the concept of this whole entire anime, I'm trying to explain this very fast, but the whole entire concept is like, there was a classmate who died in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and all of the classmates pretended that he did not die whatsoever.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And so all of a sudden, when they get to the final picture, he's there. And now a whole bunch of classmates die every single year
right.
because somebody is brought back and they don't ignore the person who, you know, is dead because nobody knows that somebody's dead or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's specifically happening around one class. Well, a new kid moves to town and then all of a sudden, he's paying attention to the person we already decided was dead for the year. And so he screws it all up. And so all the characters just start dying one by one by one by one by one by one.
Mm.
And for the first 7 episodes, it's just like maybe not every single episode, but like it's just like one-offs. And
right.
it's one of those things where like he's witnessing this for the first time. And yeah, they're horrifying. You literally in the first episode watch a girl trip down the stairs and get an umbrella in her neck. Whole entire thing.
That's not how you use an umbrella.
No. it gets to the point where like you reach episode 7 and everything immediately starts ramping up. Because they figured out from the little context, because they're like, we can stop it. They figured out from the little context things. Uh-huh. A lot of the context in the storyline of why the class curse is happening.
Uh-huh.
And it continues and it continues and it culminates till they have a Hunger Games battle royale like thing in the middle of the woods in a mansion because they're on their school field trip. And it gets to the point where somebody says like, oh, this person is the one who's been dead the whole entire time because everyone has figured out what the problem is. And so because somebody doesn't like another person, they're like, it's this one. They announce it over the speakers and it goes AWOL. Everything's on fire.
Yeah.
But it turns out it's not any of their classmates that's the person that's back from the dead.
Right.
It's one of the teacher aides.
Okay.
And it's like a whole thing.
I'm
like,
add this to my list.
It's a really good horror anime. It's really gory, so a lot of people who are squeamish, please don't watch it while you're eating food. But it's one of those things that builds up very slowly, and while there are little mistakes that they do here or there, I think it's worth it.
Alright.
So
I'm adding it to my list.
So, you know, next episode, we're gonna be talking about Brandsville.
Yeah, the Lance Wilson one. I'm actually